Your health okay?
Good to see you, yep.
You look good.
Better.
Alright, per the public notice posted on February 2nd at 8:30 a.m., we'll call to this meeting of the Ocala Police Officers Retirement System Board of Trustees meeting into order. For purposes of reporting, my name is Michael Summer, I am the plan chairman, and starting at my immediate right, if we'll go around and introduce everybody for purposes of reporting.
Steve Cuffey, secretary.
Doug Sidley, board member.
Ryan Kinkle, board member.
Larry Cole, investment consultant.
Lee Deemer, attorney.
Mindy Stewart, board member.
Dale Adams, plan administrator.
Doug Lowden, Foster and Foster.
Alicia Gaither, Justin Paul.
Alright, the first order of business will be a review of the minutes from the prior meeting that Dale sent out to us a week or so ago. Has everybody had a chance to review those?
Yep.
Do we have a motion to accept those two minutes?
Make a motion.
I'll second.
Any further discussion? All in favor of accepting the meeting minutes?
Aye.
Opposed?
Steve made the motion, Steve.
Steve. Alright. We'll now hear our evaluation report from Foster and Pope.
Foster.
Alright, keep it pretty short and sweet. I do have something to remind the board at the end. But let's just deal with page five first, the funding requirement. So the highlights, before I actually get to the numbers, on page five, the highlights for the year is that while you booked a net actuarial loss for the year, when we measured all the assumptions, the funding requirements are going down as a percent of payroll and your funded status came up. We have adopted new assumptions. Remember the experience study we went through, that exercise last year? Those are incorporated in here. So the numbers you see on page five is an estimate for the current year at 38.5%. It's the right column. I think the city, they already know about that number because I gave it a year ago. And budgeting for next fiscal year is 37.1%. Now these are always estimates because the state monies can change from one year to the next and payroll always changes. Let me just remind everybody of the assumption changes we went through. It's on page eight. We changed six. They're all bullet points right there. So basically all the assumptions that we have in your plan, we made changes from that experience day. I won't go over the details again because I think we actually did that twice last year. We went over the details. The city, remember there's a funding standard account. Here is basically a pile of money the city for many, many years has put in excess more than was necessary. And we just keep rolling it forward every year. So when I gave you those funding requirements on page five, the city has over $1.3 million to draw down on towards meeting that. It actually turns out not only did they not draw down on it last year, they put in extra. And it looked like, from what I could tell, it wasn't exact. They just ignored that state monies came in, over $500,000, and it's like they covered the state money, even though they didn't need to. But it's fine if the city has the money and, you know, when it's in the trust fund, we give it almost 8% interest, assume, whatever your investment assumption is. So I just wanted to give you that piece of information. If the city's not drawing down on it, they're actually putting more in than is necessary. Let's look at your funded status real quick. Page 10. A year ago, it was 76.8, and it's now 77.4. So you might wonder what's the number in the middle of the 78. That's if we had not made any assumption changes. So really very little difference. The assumption changes overall added a little bit to the unfunded liability, but your funded status still came up. Now as a heads up, the city will be getting a nice drop in its funding requirements the next handful of years. If you go to page 15, what you really want to pay attention to is the actuarial loss in 2008 at the bottom. You see how under years remaining it says 1? all of these are like prior debt payments that are being paid off over time. When I come here next year at this time, I can't tell you what the city's percent of payroll requirement is, but I can tell you that $343,000 and change won't be there. So if you ask me to just sort of give you an estimate on the percent of payroll help that the city will get from that, I'm guessing maybe about 4%. So we have to measure everything first and reestablish whatever the baseline is, but whatever that number is, it'll be about 4% of payroll lower just because of this 2008 piece that will be falling off.
So going back to what we discussed at the last meeting, basically changing the assumption rate in the two-year step that we did it isn't going to cost the city, shouldn't cost the city a dime.
Right, it's almost like doing it at the same time. As we knew costs were getting ready to come down, the assumption changes. It's like a 1 year where they have to put in a little extra, and then the next year it falls back. So that is correct. That's basically all I intended to cover on the report. What I wanted to remind the board of, and it's really not a decision of yours to make, but this is the last year that the membership in the city has to decide on the use of state monies. If you recall, going back to 2015, legislators passed a law that said no longer will the actuary tell you what the state money is by calculation. You can have a mutual agreement where if you recall over time, the state monies have been going up every year that comes in. And I can show you that number if you go to page 22. This last year, for instance, it came in at $530,000. This is just a tax and insurance premiums for casualty insurance for all the citizens who live in the city of Ocala. The city's been getting used all of that, okay? But this new law said, sit down, membership, active police officers in the city, and come to a decision. Should it stay the same with no change? Should you split it? Should something go into a share plan for the membership? And by the way, you have a share plan right now. It's just not funded. Okay, that's another part of the same law that passed in that same year. You need to have a share plan, even if it's not funded. But the law says by October 1st, 2018, this mutual consent agreement has to be in place. And if it's not, then the actuary has to actually come in and sort of split it. It's a little more complicated than 50-50, but I will have to come in and say, well, guess what? You guys couldn't come to an agreement, so there's a default, there's a backup, and we have to tell you going forward, what does the city get to use, and what does the membership get in their share plan? So this is not anything actionable for the board. This is, you administer the plan, but this is an agreement between the city and the active police officers.
Well, that actually works out perfectly because the new contract that we'll start that they'll start negotiating probably the end of this year, beginning of this year, will go into effect on 10/1/2018. So,
okay.
Am I explicitly addressing that state money issue?
I'll tell them that needs
to do that.
That needs to be specifically addressed and
come to mutual consent as to how it's going to be allocated.
And when you get to that part, if you want to call me, I'm more than happy. Again, phone, whatever. If you guys have questions, and you might, you might say, "What is this? What does this mean?" And say, "Well, let's talk to the actuary."
Has there been any mutual consent agreement yet? I know it's been discussed several times at meetings.
No, because we haven't negotiated the contract. And to my knowledge, nobody in the union even knew what I was talking about back in 2014, 15, when this was all cranking up. Nobody knew. I remember having a conversation in one of the meetings. Cindy had no clue. We were actually, I want to say we were going to get with you and get some kind of maybe examples that other places have done for the wording that was needed?
Yeah, well, we can provide the mutual consent agreement and the wording, but it's going to be based on what you or the membership of the city.
Yeah, but nobody knew. It was just that nobody knew how to word anything, what to write, and you said, if I recall, it needed to be a separately signed piece of...
Yeah, separately signed.
So they're going to negotiate the FOP contract, and they're going to negotiate this, basically an MOU, I guess?
Well, it's called a mutual consent agreement.
Okay.
Kind of the same thing.
Same.
It's called something different.
Yeah.
Because the annual report requirement now is, has a mutual consent agreement been entered into, yes or no, and if so, what was the date? Well, it hasn't been.
And you really just need to decide how it's going to be allocated, and then we'll reduce it to writing and a mutual consent. If you don't agree on something, then...
It goes to default.
You're going to default, yeah.
Remind me, what was the default?
It varies by plan. It depends on the money, the pattern of how the money's come in the last 16 years.
Yeah, I was going to say, it was like the 99 money was the baseline or something.
You're
like
guaranteed
that.
At least what was received in calendar of 2003. That's the minimum. Shut her off.
If I go around the state...
506?
Yeah, minimum. So if it goes to default, I think the answer is going to be that the city gets that going forward rather than that. So meaning that the amount that was received in 03, I'm giving you what I think the default will be. $506,000 was received back in 03, and $530,000 was received this last year. So one part of this new law says you don't, the city gets to use at least what came in 03. So if that's the answer, then the city would be locked in at the 506 going forward, and anything above that is split 50-50. So if $1 million came in the next year, the city would get about $750,000, you know, halfway between 500 and million, and the membership would get 250 into a share plan.
And Mike, around the state, it varies. These what's agreed to goes all the way from all the excess state money gone to fund the plan, all the way to the money used for benefit improvements.
All over the place. You can negotiate whatever, but both sides have to come to the same agreement.
Well, ultimately, that's going to fall on the FOP's
correct
group to negotiate. So,
yep.
I guess.
You sure the contract's 18 or 17?
Yeah, contract expires 9/30 of next year.
Well, you just have to understand.
Next year, 19?
Next year, 19.
I'm sorry.
That's why I think it is 19. I think the contract expires.
Yeah, no, we're going to, yeah, it's...
Well, they've got to
do it. Oh, they've got to do it now. Okay, that was my bad then. I'm thinking it's 17 still.
Punk's ever seen the union, we're just going to get with him.
As Doug said, if there's no agreement by then it's going to be essentially
50-50. So,
from the city.
Who's going to be the person from the city that this will have to be coordinated through?
Whoever negotiates on behalf of the membership.
No, I'm talking about from the city.
Can y'all say something to Cindy?
So Cindy and the FOP basically need to sit down and figure out what they want this thing to say, and then Lee can draft it for us? Is that what you're saying, Lee?
Yes. And then you avoid the 50-50 default.
When's her last day?
March 23rd.
Cindy's leaving?
Yeah, she resigned.
Oh, okay. So Cindy's...
Yes.
Whoever takes over for Cindy.
Whoever takes over for Cindy or Jared will take on those duties.
All right, we'll figure it out.
I'll let her know. I'm sure she'll give whoever a heads up.
Yeah, the statute provided as an effective date, the outside date would be when the next bargaining agreement is entered into, is the outside date.
That's next year.
Right.
Okay.
But you're saying we have to do something by October 1st of this year?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So you've got time, because the city for one more year can use this report, the 530 that's listed there. But when I come to do the next valuation, if I haven't heard anything, I think I'm obligated to bake in what I think the answer is. And I think the share plan will start getting funded at that point.
Yeah, we'll pass the agreement to the next bargaining CBA at this point as an outside date.
Yep.
I think it's important to address the issue, and everybody realize that if you don't have a mutual consent to use, it'll be 50-50, basically.
We'll resolve it well before, hopefully before we even meet the next time we have a board meeting.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Resolve.
That'd be good. It'll be now, and then I can draft it.
Yes.
All right. I'm done. If you have questions.
You felt good, usual.
I'll tell you what. How about that?
I still have good.
That's my
actual map. I can't do that.
If you got your present report, I'll get out of here and let Larry have at it.
Do you want Doug to talk it all about?
Well, we were. If we could take it out of order, we talked about that. If you don't mind, Larry, a one-time stipend for retirees.
So we need to deal.
Do we need a motion on
Doug's evaluation first?
If it's acceptable, it needs to be approved by motion.
Okay.
I'll move to accept Doug's report. I'll second.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay.
You can. Now, Doug, the board's already approved 785. Is that what you were using?
Yes, let me just double check on that. What's baked into this? It is
7.85. Okay. And now Doug will do the additional calculations required by the statute and file them with the division and send a hard copy to us. And Larry will send a Administrative Rule 60P information to us within 60 days as required.
Okay, so now we want to do public input and comment?
Yeah, that's next on.
There is none? And you want to jump to the proposal for the supplement
before we go to... Yeah, because we wanted to, if there was any input from Doug on it, Steve and I had a conference call with you guys. I think there's one for you to do it. And if you guys want to take those.
Meetings ago, we had discussion about proposing a supplemental benefit for our existing retirees. Some work was done on formulating the best plan of attack to accomplish this. And before you is the proposal that we are submitting for consideration from the board. The decision to create brackets based on the number of years retired was the best methodology we came up with to apply. You'll see that there's five different brackets there with the appropriated one-time payments that were going to be provided for individuals in those brackets. The secondary documentation that you have is the supporting documentation on the retirement dates to just show you how the brackets were actually determined. For each individual. Totaling each of the four brackets that will receive monies came to a total bill of $245,600,000. there was discussions that we had with Doug about how we were to go about paying that back over a five-year period and what kind of impact that would have on our plan itself to do that. And if we could have Doug kind of touch on that a little bit as to his thoughts on that.
Yeah, if you wanted to pay that off over 5 years, just a straight principal and interest, you know, it's a little over $50,000 a year. And based on current payroll, I think it would come out to be like a little over 0.5% of payroll a year, something along those lines, for 5 years.
Okay.
So that's it from an actuarial standpoint. I mean, the board has discretion over how long a period to pay it off.
Right.
It could be up to 30 years. I don't think that probably would be warranted. So it's really what you feel would get it through the process as far as the city's concerned. Would about 0.5% of payroll, you know, would that be doable for 5 years?
I guess we're in flux a little bit without Cindy here. This was something where Cindy was certainly involved in this process. So I guess we'll figure out who we're going to take this to next. Very good. You gave me affirmative nod.
She did text and said she would not be able to attend the meeting this afternoon, so.
Okay. I guess I want to open it up for questions itself as to if anyone had any questions about the proposal itself and if they had any kind of particular issues with it.
I may be rudimentary on that here, Doug, but basically from what you just told us a few minutes ago, this ends up in the long run not costing anything as long as we continue to experience the savings that we're getting starting next year.
Oh, well, there's always a cost, but the city's requirement's going to drop anyways. So, you know, by that dollar amount of this would take some of that back. The city's requirements would still come down because you're not using all of it. But when you talk about a cost, I mean, there's still a $245,000 plus interest cost, period. Just, will it impact the city's funding requirements? If you time it at the same point when the city's requirement's going to drop for other reasons, then they don't see a funding impact. Kind of like one debt's falling off and you're putting a smaller debt on in place of it.
Part of the rationale behind all this was some of the people who are in that 20-year block, and the fact that most of them are of the old school, basically, who were on the old supplemental plan, and where their benefits drop dramatically when they turn 65. And a lot of those people are well over 65. Some of them are beneficiaries. But that was the reason, partly for the four brackets that Steve mentioned. And then we wanted to have, this would all be as of December 31st, 17. And anybody with 5 years service or less, or who was in the drop at the time, or vested term, would not receive the supplement. That's the last people, your 36 retirees that are listed there. And obviously this is something that's fluid. It's changing all the time as people retire. And as time passes, it changes. So we selected a date certain of 12/31, and you know, just as a good cutoff date for providing the benefit. There's been no increase to retirees since 2007. That was our last increase. That was one of the $5 supplements that the city took away in 2015. Going forward.
And some of this is actually going to be paid to beneficiaries, correct?
Yes, yes. You know, we've got five or six who are disability, and we've got a number of beneficiaries.
I know one method that I looked at in trying to create brackets dealt with how much money each retiree was receiving, and I have to admit it was not effective in I felt like fairness. And in looking at this as another way of proposing it, it seemed like a much fairer method of looking at it to create the brackets itself and just basing it on the number of years it's higher. It certainly accomplished one of the goals that I know that I had in my mind when I looked at this. And when you look at that group, as Dale was mentioning, the 20 years and above, when you look at what they are receiving currently, it's difficult to look at, I have to admit.
I think it looks fair to me. I mean, if we can't, you know, I know that he said the cost of living, the percentage thing was going to be difficult to do, so I think this is a good alternative to that. So.
A cost of living is an ongoing thing. Yeah. This is a one-time bump.
Yeah.
I certainly personally had great concerns about trying to do a cost of living, fearful of the cost over and overall and just an impact.
Yeah.
Where the discussion of, as they were mentioning, the one-time payment is something that will have minimal impact overall, the least impact, I guess I should say, over any proposal that we could potentially submit.
The union has to sign off on this stuff, right?
Yes.
And when the union has knowledge of this.
And we would have to have an impact study done by Foster and Foster.
Yeah.
But I think we're looking at very, very minimal impact, as Doug has explained.
I have had a conversation with the union president about it already.
Okay, so. We can't do anything today except accept it as a move forward. Because we can't actually implement this.
This requires an ordinance change by council, so typically what we've done is we've directed the attorney to draw. This would be a very simple ordinance. I mean, a very, very simple one. Get the attorney to draw up a proposed ordinance, and then it's before it's adopted by council, then you have to have the actuarial impact statement
and
sign off by the union.
And sign off by the union.
Yeah.
So all we can do is move to accept this as and what
directly to draw up the ordinance.
Proposal. All right. He cannot vote on this, can he?
Yeah, Doug's a retiree.
Doug's a retiree would be a benefit of this. So he needs it.
Well, if he, conflict of voting interest would be if you'd be passing something that uniquely provides a benefit to a trustee on the board. This actually covers more than just Doug.
So he would not
have to.
He
can participate.
Okay.
He can. Okay. Just wanted to make sure before we moved any further ahead.
Now we're talking about the 20 years or more for $1,000, right?
That is correct for each member.
What's the effect of it?
Well, as this would be as of 12/31, so.
12/31/2017.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so anybody with 20 years or more as of that date gets the $4,000.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, would this be something like a special, like a one-time payment, or would this be for another month?
An ad hoc increase.
Yeah, which probably wouldn't be a special pay, it'd just be added into that monthly pay, is that correct?
It would probably be easier to add it in, but we can probably do either.
That way you don't have to run two payrolls in whatever month it
works. It's just an ad hoc increase.
Yeah.
We want to make a proposal.
Just a side note with Cindy leaving, somebody from the board may need to work with somebody with the city or maybe to present the council. I don't know how that's going to work.
The architect?
Yeah. So just so you know, she's been our go-between.
Correct.
I don't know that, and Tammy's supposed to take her place, but I don't know how involved. I mean, she does do budgets, so. I don't know if she's going to be as involved as Cindy has been.
Who do you recommend I have a conversation with?
I would have a conversation with Cindy first.
Okay.
She could best lead you as to who's, they're kind of splitting up her duties. So.
Okay.
Well, this is pretty straightforward.
And the only reason for putting individual retirees' names on the sheet was just for clarification in here. I went through every retiree's file and I verified, you know, all the dates to make sure everything was correct on here, retirement dates. And we have some people that retire term vested and they don't draw a benefit for 10 or 12 or 15 years. So this is as of the date they actually started drawing a benefit.
Yeah, we wouldn't have all the names in the ordinance.
Yeah.
No problem with the breakup. I like the way it's crafted and everything. I have no problem with the money at all. So.
Do we need any kind of vote as the board accepting this proposal so I can move forward?
Yeah, you would need a motion to direct me to do an ordinance and then to move it to the city and recommend adoption.
Can I accept a motion based on what Lee just said?
You're making the motion?
Can you?
No, I cannot.
Can I?
You can second it, that's right.
I can second it, and I'll second it, but I can't make the motion.
Can I have a motion?
Mm-hmm. You can make the motion.
I can make the motion. Can I make a motion that we accept this? That the proposal be accepted, that we work with the city. Repeat it for me again, please.
Yeah, let's identify which one we're going with here. That anyone that Miguel said thus determined enters retirement status 12/31/17 and has 20 years, then they get a one-time payment of $4,000.
Now these others are,
they're also,
they're all these others are part of the proposal as well.
Correct.
Oh, the whole thing?
Yes, not the whole thing.
So can we just make a motion to accept the scale as proposed?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's the whole thing.
Okay.
All right, so.
So somebody with 15 to 20 would get 3,300. Somebody with 10 years.
Yeah, okay.
Up to 15 would get 2,500.
So the motion
is all one proposal.
It's all one proposal.
The motion needs to say.
The only ones who do not receive the one-time supplement is anybody who has less than 5 years, which is the fifth item here.
And enter into working to get it approved by council. Right?
Mm-hmm.
We accept it for you to do.
Recommend an option.
Yeah.
And direct me to do an ordinance.
Yes. And then further and so forth in this through to city council for ultimate approval.
I want to repeat it. I'd like to make a motion that we accept the proposed scale that I provided for you today as proposed. That we go ahead and have Lee, we direct Lee to draft an ordinance. To prepare it for presentation to the city, and then I'll go ahead and enter into discussions with the city itself and the union about the proposal to make sure that it's accepted on their part.
And then good. I'll copy Doug so he can do an impact statement.
I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Are those opposed? Motion is accepted.
Now, John, who should this go to at the center?
Well, that's what Alicia was saying. We don't know who
it is.
Yes, I would be afraid
that. Because they're breaking Cindy's duties up amongst several people, so we're not exactly sure.
All right, well, I'll send Alicia and she knows where to root.
Thank you.
Guys, good to see you.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Cole, you have the floor.
All right, well, good afternoon, everyone. I got a copy of the report. I'll go through this kind of quick, the 1231 report. Markets have gotten extremely volatile since the end of the year, as you're probably well aware.
I think it's under news.
I need to talk fast because we're up 400 points right now, and I'd like to keep it that way while I'm presenting, so I might be down 400 by the time we get done. So, but I'll update you a little bit too on where you are. But as of 12/31, it was a good quarter. And remember, 12/31 is the first quarter of your fiscal year. So you're off to a pretty good start then, given some of that back, but not as much as you might think based on the news and everything. And I'll update you a little bit. But if you'll turn to the first few pages up through page 7 are all investment policy review related. Do we have any violations? The answer there is no. Everything was in compliance. We did not identify anything that had to be changed immediately or fixed immediately in the plan. So everything was in compliance with the investment policy, state statutes, and all that. Page 8 is the first page of performance. And you can see for the quarter, we were up on the left-hand side, net of investment management fees. This page is all net. I'll have a gross of fees page in a second. But net of fees for the quarter was up 3.6%. So you were almost halfway to your actuarial assumption rate after one quarter. If I had to guess right now, not guess, I've actually got some market values. We've lost about 1.6% through Friday. So on a fiscal year to date, you're still up around 2% going into today. So even though it's been obviously pretty crazy here lately, January was a very strong month, gave it all back in just a few days there in February, and now it's just kind of all over the place. So, and we'll talk about that a little bit more here in a minute. But as we sit here today, you're probably still up about 2% on a fiscal year-to-date basis, maybe closer to 2.5% the way the market's going today. So that's at 145. We'll tell where you'll be at 4 o'clock. On a one-year basis, then we were up about 13.8%, again net of investment management fees, with earnings of about $8.7 million. So that was the calendar year, not your fiscal year, the calendar year. So again, this is the first quarter of your fiscal year, so off to a decent start, believe it or not. Then you can see the 3 and 5 year numbers. Over the last 5 years, you've earned a little over $26 million and been about 9% a year net from investment management fees. So it's been a nice market, obviously, for us up until this correction.
Is it a correction?
Well, it has been technically. As the definition of a correction being 10%, the answer is yes. Are we in a bear market? The answer is actually no yet. I mean, no as of now. Again, as of 140 bucks. Maybe by the time market closes today, who knows?
Getting the theme in this?
Yeah, the theme is very volatile. And it's been very volatile late in the day, which is when this actually started. That day it was down 1,600 points. It was from 3:30 to 4. I've never seen anything like it. It just kept, literally you could just see it ticking down. And I had TV on in my office watching it. It was not pretty. But again, what I'll remind you, it gets a lot of news, it gets a lot of publicity. I'm nervous about it. We should be nervous about it. But if you look at the market the way it was, the run that we've had over the last 9 years, and particularly that run we've had since the election, it's like I use the rubber band analogy. You stretch that rubber band, you stretch that rubber band. It was overdue for a correction, so a correction doesn't really surprise me. I just didn't expect to see a correction in 2 days, a 10% correction in 2 days. So. But again, when you stretch the rubber band that tight, maybe you should expect a little bit more of a flip. Interesting, when you compare this to, say, 1987 and some of the other bear markets, and I've been doing this a long time, you go back and you've seen a lot of these charts probably managers have brought in and stuff that says, here was the event that caused this, triggered this, triggered this, triggered this. There's no real event that triggered this correction. The event, if you will, was good news. It was almost too good news. The economy was strong, the labor market was too strong, and there was fear now that the Fed would raise rates faster and higher, and inflation was going to be higher than we had anticipated. And that's what spooked the market initially. From then, you had a lot of, I really don't know that I can explain it all. I don't know that anybody can. You can read 100 articles and get 100 different opinions on why this market got like it is, but there's no doubt there's a lot of program trading in there. There's no doubt there's a lot of hedge funds that hit some trigger points with interest rates. If they go up a little bit, then there were certain sell orders that went in automatically. This market was moving so fast. That wasn't you and me in there calling our broker saying sell. It was going too fast. We couldn't have done it that way. So it's a lot of triggers that were just kicking in and sort of feeding on themselves, I guess. And the impact
what I'm trying to get my hands around, have been for a long time, what the impact of all these passive products is going to be in these kind of market conditions. ETFs, that, you know, you have an ETF for the market in general, so people can get in and out of the entire market very quickly. Or they can get in and out of certain sectors. You know, you can buy an ETF for about anything you want to buy an ETF for. Just, if you want just energy stocks, if you want just tech stocks, if you want whatever, you can buy these different ETFs, and I think it feeds the volatility. And you don't have, when people decide to do that, it's not like they're sitting there thinking, do I like IBM at this level? Do I like, you know, Apple at this level? They're just saying, in the market, out the market. And that's, I think that's contributing to a lot of the volatility. But mostly it's an interest rate driven, inflation fear driven correction. That also got fueled by the fact that we were in the ninth, almost the 10th year of a bull market, and we had an extreme run-up that just absolutely couldn't continue at that pace anyway since the election. So all that, and when we look at where the market is now, not everything hit 10%, so not everything has seen correction level yet. Depends on kind of what area of the market you're looking at, but we're close. So in between 6 to 10%. When you see that 1,600 points and a lot of these things you saw in that one day, the number is big, and obviously it was the biggest down day or whatever it was that day in the history of the market in terms of the points, but it was nowhere near the percentage point drop we saw in 1987 in one day. So I think it was, we had about a 6% drop this day. The 87 drop was 25. So it wasn't anything like that, but it felt like that. I think because the numbers were so big, just because the market's at 26,000 or 25,000 or 26,000 when it started. So just higher numbers, and it was kind of mind-boggling. But I can't tell you, I can't sit here and tell you when it's going to settle down. It's obviously, it's up today. It was up Friday. We could have another 800 down point day tomorrow, or even today, the way the markets have moved. So there's got to be some shaking out of this. I think this is just pure guess, but it seems like we're kind of in the later innings of it. So probably closer to the bottom. You know, obviously we're closer to the bottom than we were when it started, but I don't think it's anything that's extended because the fundamentals are still very good. A lot of these stocks that, if you like them at 16 times earnings, that same company with nothing changing in its forecast is now selling at 12 times earnings or 14 times earnings, whatever, but it just got cheaper and nothing changed in terms of what they expect on the sales side, what they expect on the revenue side, and what they expect to do in earnings. The tax cut contributed to the fears of interest rates going up because we had a pretty significant tax cut in a period of full employment. I would argue that that full employment number, though, is a little bit distorted in that that just measures the people that are number one looking for jobs, so it doesn't count the people that are out of the hunt. But it also doesn't count, it would count the engineer flipping burgers at Burger King is counted as employed. But he's underemployed.
Right.
Yeah, but he's an engineer. So I think there's still room to grow in that part of the economy without a lot of wage inflation. But that was the fear, that you now had an unemployment number that would spark inflation. So you get to full unemployment, there's fears that you get wage push inflation, you know, that people will demand higher wages. And that is going to happen. We're going to see some higher wages. But I would argue again that the Fed has wanted to see some inflation. They want some inflation in this economy in that 2 to 3% level. And so I don't think that's necessarily unhealthy in the long run, but it really did scare the markets that it might be a little higher than that if we have the wage factor in here. But what I would say is offsetting that wage factor probably is energy costs, in that we are now we being the U.S., is a main player in controlling the price of oil and natural gas. So it's kind of stabilized in that 60 to 65 range. Dropped a little bit below, oil dropped a little bit below 60, but it's pretty much stabilized in that 60 to 65 range. So I don't think you're going to see a lot of pressure from energy costs like we've seen in some market corrections. So fundamentals are good. The economy looks strong. GDP growth looks pretty good. I do not like what came out today in terms of the spending or what they just passed. This is a little bit of a personal opinion, but also one from a market standpoint, that the debt is getting out of control, and the bond market will not like that. So that may drive yields up a little faster. In addition to the Fed, new Fed chairman who would like to see rates at a more quote, normalized level. So we could see rates go up a little bit, and that might spook the market even a little bit more in the short run. But in general, rising interest rates mean that the economy is probably doing pretty well, and they're trying to slow it down a little bit. So that's not all bad news for earnings for corporations and for stock valuations. So it's just going to be a little volatile here going forward, a lot of factors. So that's kind of the, I got into the forecast before I got into the report here, but anyway, that's where we are. I don't like the infrastructure, what I started to say, is I don't like the infrastructure plan they put out today either in terms of the amount of spending. If they get a little more private money involved in there, maybe it'll be good, but it's a huge spending bill, and it's going to increase the cost. So there doesn't seem to be anybody in D.C. now paying attention to that. Everybody's spending. And there's a few, but not enough to make a difference right now. So that could cause a lot higher yields and some problems. Historically, just to let you know, a lot of our research, historically what has happened is that the 10-year treasury, as long as the 10-year treasury is below 5%, a rise in rates was really highly correlated to a rise in the stock market. So if you go back in history and look at rising interest rate environments, the stock market actually does okay up until the 10-year treasury hits about 5%. And that seemed to be some kind of a magical number for whatever reason. Above 5%, that will pull money out of the stock market. So think about it for a minute. A lot of retirees, if you're sitting there with a lot of money, or you're a retiree with money, 5% might be enough to say, you know, I don't need to risk the stock market. That's enough income. I can live off that income, where 2% maybe wasn't. So, but at least when you do a lot of the research and see the money flows in the past, 5% was kind of a magic number. I don't know if now that if there's a new magic number because rates have been so low so long, maybe that new magic number is 3.5% instead of 5. I don't know, because people have gotten used to a lower interest rate environment. Maybe they just, at that point, they'll pull money out. But at least historically, and we're nowhere near that 5%. The 10 years at 2.9. 2.8, I think today actually it dropped a little bit. I think it's back down, might even be 2.75, I think the last number I heard this afternoon. So it's at 2.75, you know, that's a little over halfway to 5%. That doesn't mean history is going to repeat itself. That's just what the research shows. So let's go back to the report though, and any recommendations I have here. On page 9 is your asset allocation as of 12/31. Now, the domestic equity has come down a little bit. I actually have the number here. Have it pulled up. I asked for an update this morning. It doesn't change all that much. We're at about 43% in domestic equities right now, so it's come down some. What I'm going to recommend on this page is that we do move a little bit of money from the domestic equities over to international, and I'll get specific with that recommendation here on the next page. But that's really the only recommendation I'm going to make. The MLPs continue to struggle as they sort of... I guess the word I would use, I think Westwood was in here not to, to the last meeting, wasn't it?
Right.
Yeah, last meeting, and talked about some of the companies working on their balance sheets and actually, you know, trying to get in position really to improve their balance sheets so they can fund for future growth and projects internally rather than having to go to the market at anticipated higher interest rates. And that's what I think we're seeing right now. So going through a little bit of a rough patch, but the volumes coming through the pipelines are good. The demand is certainly there in an improving economy globally, and so I think the I just recommend we leave the MLPs where they are. They're still too volatile for me to say, let's add some more, but you're only at about 3% in the asset class. That's underweighted relative to our target on page 9, so we'll just leave that. But what I would like to do is move 250,000 or 500,000 out of domestic equities and over into the Euro Pacific Fund and international. And if you go to the next page, on page 10, specifically, I would just recommend we take the 250 from Sawgrass Large Cap Growth and from Westwood Large Cap Value. So take 250 from each of those and put 500,000 more into international. International right now is, from a valuation perspective, is still a little cheaper than the U.S. market. And their central banks are doing the same thing our Fed did the last several years, and that is keeping rates low, trying to stimulate their economy. Kind of got a global effort going there to get growth going. Seems to be working. With those valuations being cheaper, I think it makes sense just to move a little bit of that money, take a little bit of the overweight in the domestic stocks right now, and put it into the international. We can vote on that, I guess, after we go through the rest of the report. But if you go to page 12, taking a look at the report and the rankings here, the 3 point, this is gross, these are returns of gross of investment management fees. They had 3.8% for the quarter, so as I told you, you're off to a strong start for the quarter. That was a little bit above average in your peer group in the top 46%. The 1 year, although you were well ahead of your target index, was a little bit below average. Some of that was really due to just the allocation that we have, maybe a little bit, probably a half percent impact maybe from the MLPs, but we also had Sawgrass have a difficult year relative to their benchmark, but they were in here also, and I think they did a pretty good job last meeting of explaining how they're typically going to make it up in the down markets, which I'm hoping they're making up right now for you in terms of protecting the assets on the downside. Yeah, they need to. Westwood had a fantastic year. You can see they were well ahead of their benchmark and ranked in the top 14% against their peer group. So as you go down the page for the quarter anyway, going back to the quarterly review, convertibles were up again 1.7%. They had a good year at 13%. Those were all kind of fixed income alternatives because we didn't like bonds. So several years ago, moved into some different asset classes to try and keep the return up a little bit. And those from an asset allocation perspective, most of those moves were, all except MLPs, have worked out pretty good. And they had more money in them too. So real estate was up 7.2% for the year. Again, that's an asset class that I don't think you're going to see double-digit returns out of it, but I'm okay with keeping money in there because if we just get 5 to 7%, that's better than we're going to get in bonds for the time being. So,
what about the Hood River on the page?
Hood River just had a difficult quarter. In that growth, the small cap growth particularly, it was a very volatile quarter, and you have a few names really driving it, and if you miss them, you might miss them for one quarter, and those are probably the names that are helping them this quarter. So you haven't had them very long, so that one quarter of underperformance doesn't alarm me at all. They've got a great long-term track record, as you know, you just hired them recently. They struggled a little bit up for the quarter. There's none of your managers. The one manager that I still did not get to meet with that I said I was going to try to, but I had some things I had to, my mother passed away in January, and I had to take off for about 10 days to take care of some stuff. Never did get the meeting with them that I was hoping to get, so they were up 2.4% for the quarter, but they're struggling a little bit in their longer term, so I do want to have a meeting with them. And I like the asset class, and from an asset class perspective, they've been a good manager to have, again, relative to bonds, but they haven't done quite as well as they should have done. American Realty's done better. So we want to get a little picture on why they're struggling a little bit more than their peers. The 5 year rank, 5 year, you're at 9.7. Your 3 year is still a little bit below average, but ahead of the benchmark. And your 5 year is ahead of the benchmark and in the top 29%. So all in all, the plan is working pretty well. I'll show you a really tight range here. Go to page 16. Page 16 was if you look at the quarter, number one, there's a really tight range in the quarter relative to, what this is telling you is how other public pension funds around the country have done. So these are not just Florida, this is public pension funds around the country. So, for instance, for the quarter, your total fund of 3.8% ranked in the top 46%. You're that blue, the blue circle. The benchmark, if you just did the benchmark for the quarter, it was only 0.6% below, but would have ranked in the 81st percentile. So, again, a very tight range for the best and the worst for the quarter. That's true also, really, of the 3 and the 5 years. That's a little tighter than we would normally see. So, again, that's not why don't get too alarmed. We're a little 3 years below 50th percentile, but it was above the benchmark, and nothing there that worries me. On page 17 and 18, page 17 is just the cash flow is the green line. Your market value is the blue line. This is going back to 2012. This is a five-year look back. And the difference between that green line and that blue line is represents investment earnings over this bull market period, which is over $26 million in your plan. And the other, page 18 is looking at it from a risk perspective. What kind of risk are we taking? Okay, here are our returns. Here's how we rank. Are we taking a lot of risk to get those returns? And the answer is no. As you can see on the top of page 18, if you go over to the right, standard deviation of 5.08%. That's kind of the most common measurement of volatility. And to give you some reference to that, you can see what the different asset classes, the higher that number, the more volatile. So look at the different asset classes going down that column. What's kind of interesting is if you look over the last 5 years, bonds themselves, which are considered the safest or kind of the least volatile asset class, standard deviation of 3, your standard deviation is only 5. That's not a lot of difference, but you're getting almost equity-like returns, so that's a reflection of the nice bull market that we've had. But it's also a reflection of all these different asset classes that you've been in, that we did diversify them to kind of lower volatility, get you out of bonds because we didn't think bonds were going to produce much return, and that has worked in terms of the risk level and the volatility of your plan to a very low. And then two more charts, and then I'll be glad to answer any questions. Page 19, those are your fiscal year returns going back to 2005. So what you'll see there is there's 13 full fiscal years on there. 9 out of those 13 you've beaten your assumption rate. And then fiscal year to date, that number was 3.76 coming into this quarter. Like I said, it's probably somewhere between 2 and 2.5 right now. It's got some work to do for 2018. Hopefully get these markets back up. And then the last page I'll cover with you is on page 20, where we do look, you know, this is kind of our report card in a way. We want to get consistent returns for the plan over time. You're going to have volatile quarters. You're going to have volatile periods. You're going to have managers that do well. You're going to have managers that screw up. But in the long run, what this chart shows in the top left, this chart is a rolling five-year period. I'm on the top left on page 20. Rolling 5 years returns going back 5 years. So it's really 10 years worth of data because it started 5 years ago. And what it says is, it's a very complicated chart, I think, but it says that 50% of the time on a rolling 5 year basis, your plan is in the top 25% relative to other public pension funds. 40% of the time, it's in the next 25%. So 90% of the time on a rolling five-year basis, and this is measured quarterly, your plan has been relative to your peer group, ranked above average. So that's a consistency that we like to see. You got two outlying periods there where it was in the third. You had no periods where a rolling five-year was in the bottom quartile. So three things we look at. This is one. We look at performance, and then we also look at the risk level. And right now, I'd say everything is where we like to see it. Now, obviously, we've got some volatile markets coming up here. Your managers, I've been a little surprised that we've been able to keep up this well in the bull market. I think I told you that before. You've got the kind of managers that typically will do very well in down markets and protect your assets, and that's where you'll see gains relative to peer groups and relative to benchmarks. But if you go on this page, page 20, down the bottom right, you see down market capture and up market capture. In the last 5 years, you've actually kept, when the market's up, you're capturing 104% of the upside. When it's down, you're capturing 98% of the downside. I would expect this plan over longer periods of time to be about 95% upside capture and maybe 85% downside capture. So this is a little bit unusual, kind of on a positive note. I hope it doesn't mean we're going to see, you know, we won't have a good quarter when the market goes down. The type of managers you have there, at least historically, have protected well on the downside. So, I don't think the world's coming to an end. A little nervous about a few things out there, but the fundamentals for the stock or companies are still very strong, and the valuations are very reasonable now. I thought they were fairly reasonable before. So any questions on the report or on my recommendation to remove 250,000 from Sawgrass large cap growth, 250,000 from Westwood large cap value, and put that 500,000 into Euro Pacific?
Does that basically max out the international?
No, that only takes us up about 0.7, so it takes us up to about 14. We'll still be a little bit below target, but I don't want to throw it all in there at once. It's kind of dollar average.
And that brings us down
0.7. Okay. So we're at 43 now. That take our equities down to about 42.3, I think, based on current values, a little over 42% on domestic. And then it would increase our international to about 14. Now, bonds don't look that attractive yet. If rates continue to climb, I mean, if they get up high enough, we'll allocate some money back into the bonds, but I don't want to be in there in a rising.
What about with the real estate? I mean, we're getting to a point where we've actually got a track record to look at.
Mm-hmm.
We've been in it long enough.
Yep.
Would there become a point where you would recommend increasing that a little bit? I realize we'd have to change the whole. Increasing it to.
No, I wouldn't recommend doing that right now. For the reasons that there's a lot of concerns in the real estate market right now about apartments being overbuilt and office space being under pressure from a lot of people being able to work at home, and there's just not as much, maybe not as much demand, although I would argue there's still a lot of demand for Class A office space. It doesn't seem, you know, they're still building office buildings like crazy in metropolitan areas. But there is concern that they might not be able to negotiate significant increases or favorable rent terms. So the expectation for the asset class in general, Mike, went from 9 to 10 or 9 to 11% annualized return. If you talk to those managers even now, they'll tell you 5 to 7% is a reasonable expectation. So I don't think I really want to put any more money in that asset class. That's not going to necessarily help us in this market environment. I just don't think it's a good place to go right now. I don't want to get out of it, but I don't want to take it up to 10 right now.
I was just curious.
That's a good question. It's just been, again, relative to bonds, it's good, but we're already as low in bonds as I want to get. Pretty significantly below the benchmark there, and I don't want to take it too low. It increases the risk level of your plan. Bonds don't look attractive at 3% unless the market's down 15, then all of a sudden they look pretty good. So they're still there as kind of an anchor. There is an argument out there, and you'll hear see some articles about whether or not pension funds like this should have any bonds at all.
What about this? It's basically the same question with convertibles.
I really like convertibles. Near about where we want to be, though, we're a target. I've always told you convertibles are kind of chipping away to play the stock market.
if you were down around 7-8%, I'd say let's add to it. But the problem adding the convertibles right now, is I talked to two of the managers, SSI and Advent, are two we use a lot, and they're both kind of having trouble finding convertibles to buy right now in certain quality ranges. The market's just not, the supply just isn't there. So I'm not anxious to add a whole lot of money to them. We could probably sneak a little over there, but you're already pretty much at your target. So I think it's a good place to be right now in terms of the chicken way to play the stock market. It should be a lot less volatile and should protect in the long run. So that's why we got a 10% target there.
All right, so going back to what you were proposing, you wanted $250K each from Westwood and Sawgrass Large Cap, and move that to Euro Pacific.
Yep. That would be it.
Yes, sir.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Any discussion?
It's just a little fine-tuning. You know, we don't make huge moves, as you know. I don't recommend big swing, but you get burnt.
We get a bunch of big moves, though.
Yeah.
Back big moves. Yeah, and all these things.
As in 2, 3, 4, 5% maximum, but when we rebalance like this, I like to take it kind of dollar averaging. A little conservative in that regard.
Is there any timing on that that we need to be concerned with, or just whatever we can?
Right now, the markets seem to be moving kind of in tandem. You know, Europe's up, we're up, and vice versa, so I don't think there's any hurry about it. Get it done as soon as we can.
Does anybody got any further discussion on it? All in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Opposed? Done deal.
All right.
I'll work it down. We'll get that done.
That's all.
All right. We did. We approved the actuarial assumption at that last meeting, right?
Yep.
7.85 this year and
7.75. For the next part of the agenda, I will pass the baton to Secretary Cuffey.
We got approval for Mike's attendance at the spring conference on the agenda next.
I haven't announced exactly where it is yet.
No, it's usually in Tallahassee.
Well, I know it's in Tallahassee, but I mean, as far as Alicia, have you seen anything as to dates yet? It's usually right around the end of the legislative session, a little after. And I'm sure Lee will tell us what's up with that. But
this is in line with the once-a-year attendance. That's encouraged.
Pretty much. I usually go in the spring. I know you've gone in the fall, and many of you go in the fall. I usually try to go to the spring one because it's closer to the end of the legislative session.
Any further discussion about the attendance? Have a proposal to accept sending Mike to the spring conference?
I make a motion.
A second?
A second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So, be done.
Thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
This brings us to Lee's portion of our party.
No.
Annual budget. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I skip something?
You skipped over.
I'm sorry. My bad.
And I'm not sure what we're looking at.
Oh, is it my turn?
It's your turn.
My turn?
My turn.
It's okay. Let's see. What I passed out here, the long page here is the expense and revenues for the board. And then the other page is the budget. This board is required now to take action on both of these each year. I'll start with the expense and revenue. I just did a summary. The total revenue for the board was $11,944,000. That was from city contributions, employee contributions, interest, dividends, and then the gains on investments this year. We paid out a total of $5,784,000 in retiree, disability, beneficiary, and drop payments. You keep going down the list, it shows all of the managers, custodian, legal, actuary fees that were paid. Total expenses for this plan was $6,381,000, with showing a net gain for this year of $5.562 million. And down there at the bottom, this is just broken down. As we report to the state how much we pay for the managers, the pension payments to retirees, refunds, legal, actuary, and administrative are all combined.
This is fiscal year, right?
Yes.
So, question. Wells Fargo. Why does that number seem to be significantly higher to me than it was with BMY when we looked at this in the past?
It is higher. The main cause of that is we were getting a ridiculous price from Bank of New York for transactions. Part of that also still has, if you can remember, we made a change kind of mid-year with two of the managers as to how transactions were happening.
That's when we made the changes with Frontier and
Hood River. Yeah.
We went to their...
All right, so a lot of this is cost us. That number should be going down then.
Yes.
Because we went to the mutuals rather than the active.
They had such high trades and it was driving the cost.
Yeah, especially.
All right, that's why I just remember that number seems way out of line from what I've seen there.
Bank of New York was not charging anything for trades.
That's right.
So it didn't send anything right. Actually, Bank of New York just stopped and we'll see us be on this.
So it's Hood River and Frontier going to go down with us changing from the one style to the other?
You don't want to see the transaction charges anymore.
No, I'll talk about it on the actual.
The manager's cost should not go down. No. Just Wells Fargo's.
Okay.
They're getting there.
I don't remember what the... it seemed to me it was pretty close to the same, wasn't it? You're paying the mutual fund fee now versus a separate manager fee.
I thought there was about half.
I think they were the same. I think one of them is 0.85% or something.
I can't recall.
I know it was like 1.5, 1.25 for some of them, and then 85 is sticking in my head.
Yeah.
The only reason I ask those questions is because you know what happens every time the legislature meets, they start harping on and they'll start jumping on again. Fees, yeah. Amount of money paid, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, and we looked at that when we made that recommendation. I wish I could remember off the top of my head, but when we made the recommendation, costs were not a factor. It was a factor because your transaction costs were extremely high.
I think the costs were pretty much a wash of what their fees were.
That saved money versus if we continued to the Bank of New York, it would have been.
And at the time, if we were with anybody, our fees were going to go up.
Yeah.
It mattered if it was like First Bank or SunTrust or Bank of New York. We had a contract with them from 1985. It was honestly very cheap in their prices.
Cheap on the one side, but then...
Yes, and our cheap on the customer service side, too. I can tell you that we may have more fees in Wells Fargo, but I know your office uses them. I know the actuary uses Wells Fargo statements.
I know, they're easier.
And Yeah.
They're easier, you get accurate numbers, you get them on time.
So many from Foster and Foster that...
Little things like accuracy and stuff as a custodian are kind of important, so...
You can take Larry's book, Siegel's book, or Walden's book now, and match back to the bank. They're all within maybe a couple hundred dollars. We know what's in your account now. It's very accurate.
Do you need separate motions on the budget?
They do need separate motions. One that, this one that would be for the expenses for this board for fiscal year 16-17.
Are you moving on to this page, or are we just gonna deal with this page first?
That's up to you.
You wanna hear the whole thing?
This is 16-17, expenses and revenues?
Yes.
Those were actual and current.
Actuals. I don't know why we have to approve after the fact, but...
Right, this is what it is.
We do.
You approve a budget beforehand and approve it after it's been done.
Alright, so we need a motion to approve the actual 16-17 expenses of that fiscal year.
There you go, that's right.
Just need somebody...
I'll make the motion. I'll second.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Alright, on the other sheet, this is what has been budgeted for 2019 in the bluish gray area. The 2018 was approved last year, and then I've shown the expenses for 17, 16, 15, and 14. To give you a comparison. For this, for the 2019, the drop payments went down some. You can see down here at the bottom, there's $1.194 million scheduled to be paid out, but I've got $1.7 million in the budget. Generally, one or two people leave earlier than they're supposed to, or scheduled to. So I always try to leave a little bit of a cushion in there. And then with the retiree payments to disability beneficiaries, they usually always go up every year because they have more leaving and drawing retirement than deceased. Everything else is just about in line with what the budget was for the previous year.
What is the book publication subscriptions?
Generally, that is for the only thing I actually pay out for that in the other boards is the FPPTA membership. This board doesn't usually participate in that conference. So I don't have anything in there. As you can see, the expenses for 17, 16, 15, and 14 are zero.
Yeah. How come you had it, Nate, this year but not next year?
I put it in, I did put it in for the 500 for last year, but not this year. Just based off of history. We used to pay the separate fee, but this board hasn't sent anyone to those conferences in a while. Generally, if you have membership, you get a lower price on the conference.
Mm-hmm.
The other two boards still send at least two or three people a year, so.
And it's the same information.
They actually have 5 to 6 different paths you can take. During that day,
out of curiosity, the 2016 expenses, why were they so much less than in the previous years? I don't think that was part of the board.
One of the things is the drop. The drop in 2016 was only 412,000, and in 17 and years prior, 17 was 2.2 million. That all just depends on when they leave, when they enroll, and when they leave. You can stay into up to 5 years, but.
Go across. Yeah, going across, but it seems like a lot of the categories were. Considerably lower.
Yeah, last fiscal year we had 8 people exit the drop, and this year we've only got 3 that are scheduled.
What else? Well, we have 3 that are scheduled. But. Oh, Cynthia Barnes is in the drop. She's just getting out.
She's just retired. She has to submit her drop paperwork.
I'll have to look at that tomorrow. That is going to be. Okay. Oh, what?
It just said a number of the categories. It was just considerably lower.
It is. That is considerably lower. Even the management fees.
And much lower than 2015.
The investment management fees are only $75,000.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
No.
It's missing a number.
That's way off.
Yeah, it is missing something. And it may not be adding that.
Can we table this till the next meeting?
Absolutely.
The budget? But you can check on this.
Yeah, the budget actually, you have until October 1 to the city.
It'll just be submitted to the city in March, because that's their deadline. So it'll be after the 5.
So, this number here. It's gone up from 450.
Yeah, it should be like almost 200,000.
So you're saying that's what we spent last year? And this is the project fire this year?
It may even be fire.
Oops.
Oops, copy take the wrong.
So this one, right? And not this one.
Yeah, the 2016 expenses look like they're off.
All right.
But the actual budget for 19 and 18.
Your 2017 expenses for investment management fees show 413,484.
Mm-hmm.
Is that reflected on the revenues and expenses that was just discussed?
It is, but you have to. It's going to incorporate from here, investment manager spreadsheet, all the way down to Wells Fargo.
Okay.
So it's going to incorporate all of those.
Okay.
And it's right here as a total.
Okay, that's it. It's right at the bottom.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
And it's actually incorporating from here.
Right here.
From right there down to
what'd you say, Wells Fargo? Okay, yep. Yeah, that makes sense. Thank you.
I expect your investment management fees to be around 460 or something.
Should
be between 60 and 70 basis points on 70 million.
Since 413 last year.
So just what
we're tabling approving the budget. So we've got the numbers figured out.
Okay. Oh.
That's just
that. I got you. Sure.
Wow.
I just wondered how that is. Okay.
Does anybody have any more questions on that?
No. Oh, excuse me.
Yeah, forget it.
I'm gonna redo that, I guess, next meeting.
All right. Now we're to you.
Well, Mike, to address your earlier comment, session's half over, and it looks like we may, next meeting. With no unfunded state mandates, expense buys or otherwise, the only bill pending now that could have an impact on us, but not financially, I don't think, is Senate Bill 980. That changes some actuarial requirements, which I think may well not be adopted. So our next meeting, I think, will say probably nothing passed this time, which is good. But even if that one does, I don't think we'll have an adverse impact. So good news from the legislature. 2 years in a row now. And that's it?
Come on, seriously? You're not going to tell us to go file our form? Form ones or come on?
You know what? My couple people mentioned it. Yeah, and don't forget, you need to file your Form 1 financial disclosures by July 1st. Otherwise, you'll be fine.
You always mention it this meeting, and then you harp on it the next meeting.
Yeah, well, and I used to say every meeting, and I stopped doing that, but a couple people mentioned just what you did. So I guess I better start again. Well, it is important.
That's it?
Yep.
Good. Wow. All right. Other matters brought before the board?
I've got one item, and it has to do with something we just mentioned. Larry and I have been pretty much working these out when we've had these large expenditures with a drop, but we've got a drop payout of $685,000 coming up in April.
April?
Yeah. Actually, be paid in May. It's supposed to stay open.
And do we have to raise
with this volatility,
if the board... We've raised money for Presley and for McBride.
Okay.
And I know previously you had said to get it from equities.
Well, that's probably where we'll get it again, but if the board can give us the leeway to give me the leeway to just make a recommendation to Dale and get it approved kind of after the fact. As volatile as this market is, I'd hate to read it right now, yes, but I might wish we did, but I'd rather kind of see where we are when we get a little closer to that. And if we,
well, it's scheduled not to be until May, with the end being April 30th, so it would be paid mid-May, unless something happens and you were to leave early, I don't know. But right now it's scheduled for May.
Do you think we ought to hang on to the MLP line? Is that still your position?
Yeah, I still like them. I just don't like the volatility, but I just don't see how that story is not going to play out. But, I mean, you heard from Westwood, valuations are pretty good. The volumes going through the pipelines are good. They are going through a kind of a restructuring phase right now where a lot of them are...
We just got in a little early, right?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Never wrong, right? So they did it earlier. Yeah. No, they didn't turn out like we thought, that's for sure. But fortunately, we didn't just dive in, so that's where...
All right, so you just need a motion to give you the flexibility to figure out where to get it when the time comes.
I don't know if we need a motion to do that or let us do it and then...
Just that's the way I
direct us to work it out and then we can improve it afterwards.
Well, I'm my administrator.
Yeah.
Raise the money and
remember. That's all I have.
You know. You say 685?
Yeah.
And I don't need to know by May 7th.
I'll put in the vape.
Yeah. Well, that does give you a little time to see where this thing shakes out and make some decisions from there.
Yeah.
Because if it is 10%.
It may be, the way it's going now, you know, if it made the decision at 1, I'd want you to give me to 4. So.
So, if you give me the end of April, that'll be...
Hey, you're 507 right now.
Is that what...
I'm 507.
I'm just gonna check, I hear you're...
Alright, anything else? Anybody got anything else?
About 500 Friday.
Alright, that'll close the meeting, the time is now, 2:38.
Good to see everybody. Yeah, I'm moving.